Okay. So if we put CW at the level lower than the noises around, we can still retrieve it. That's how the communication with the spacecraft that already left solar system being done. Maybe Paul would be able to say a few words about it and to exit.
Left the solar system? I missed that.
Yeah, because I'm trying to question right now. I'm not sure if I'm going to be... If I'm going, because I like the way that Dr. Roy said that the unmodulated carrier is a digital form of the signal, but at the same time is being very low CW could be heard and received, and even though that is below the noise level, we know the frequency, we can still retrieve it, similar way to the Voyager spacecraft that left already solar system, and we still retrieve the signal that is lower than the noise level. So I thought that you would be able to comment on it, but you...
Yeah, well, you know, they've upgraded the receiving end of the deep space thing, the space network over the years, you know, so that's one reason they can still copy these things. But they had the original antennas and the original system, you know, they would not be able to hear, I don't think they'd be able to hear anything right now, but they you know, really improved things on Earth. So, you know, that brings them high enough above the noise where they can hear it. But, you know, are they using, you know, a whisper type of system now? I don't think so. You know, they just, I think they're copying, you know, the 8 gigahertz signal the way they always did. You know, with enough filters built into the system to copy it. But I really don't know. Back to you, Wes.
Yeah, from what I've read, they have the reference signal. They know exactly the frequency. The frequency is fixed. So they have some sort of oven there that makes that frequency drift possible or very low. And then they take reference signal, and using the reference signal in here, they are able to recover to the low frequency components through removing high frequency static noise while preserving slower changing information on the signal, on the components of the signal. Dr. Roy, can you comment on it?
Yeah, I'm aware of the frequency locking, but I don't think that's an issue with the noise floor. Unfortunately, you can't retrieve things below the noise floor unless you have changed the means of the transmission. And things like FT8, you're using redundancy, you're repeating information, and you're putting in error correction codes on top of that. And that's what effectively allows us to do the magic trick of below our noise floor. In the case of maybe these space transmissions, as Paul said, primarily I think it's improvement of the reception area, increasing the effective surface area, getting a little bit more electromagnetic waves in to kind of boost the reception allows you to kind of figure it out. Theoretically, if you were able to change the transmission rate at the transmitter site, you could decrease the signal rate, the symbol rate, like we mentioned earlier, and improve the signal-to-noise ratio. So I don't think it's the frequency lock that's doing the reception of below noise floor signals. I think it's either a combination of lowering the symbol rate or just improving the reception with earthbound antenna systems, and maybe coupling them together to improve the signal strength.
Okay, so I'm still trying to challenge you with your statement, although I like it, that CW is digital mode. It has characteristic of the digital mode, but one thing digital doesn't have, and CW has, you can have a very low signal and still receive it, and you can have it at the level or similar to the level, if you say below the level is impossible, but similar to the level or a little bit higher than the level of the noise, you can have a noisy CW, you can. Like in the analog TV, you had the noisy TV, you had. But in digital TV, you cannot have a noisy TV. You either have it or don't have it. So how could we stand that CW is digital? Back to you.
As I mentioned before, you can have a somewhat noisy digital television signal, but it's a lot less forgiving, again, because the amount of information that is in that signal is humongous compared to dots and dashes of CW. So you can, but the noise floor is going to have a much more significant effect on degrading your video image as opposed to a series of dits or dots. I hate to kind of do this, but I tend to do this. I Googled it, and it said CW is considered a fundamental binary digital mode because it uses two distinct states, signal on and signal off, to represent data. While technically a simple form of amplitude modulation, it differs from modern digital modes as it typically is decoded by human ear instead of a computer. So, I only do this when basically Google kind of just repeats my sentiments in slightly different words. But, you know, I've read year in, year out that the first digital radio mode was CW. People kind of really like that idea. And I don't think the fact that it's a decent low noise mode that you can receive negates its digital nature.
And Swan, one more comment.
Yes, Paul.
What you want right now is actually talking to Chep at Paulson Laboratory. You know, Beer Madrid right now. They have one of the big antenna in Madrid. It's operating right now. You know, I go to the Deep Space Network website. I always like that website. They show all the different antennas for the Deep Space Network, and which ones are active and which spacecraft they're talking to. You know, at any moment. And right now, one of them is Voyager 1, and they actually give the round trip talk time. Right now it's 1.97 days, coming up very close to 2 days, you know, for a round trip communication at the speed of light. But if anybody wants that website, it's the Deep Space Network. You just Google that for NASA, and you click on that. You know, I could actually give you the website, but it's relatively long. But anyway, back to you, Ron.
Yeah, Paul, do you know offhand if NASA ever decreased the data rate of these transmissions in order to, to squeeze a little bit more signal-to-noise ratio out of them?
Yeah, over time they have decreased it. And I used to know the number 166. I forgot what it was. But yeah, they had to do that. When it was close by, they, you know, no problem. But that number has really dropped over time.
Okay, very good. So, did FT8 work? You know, I mean, if they were going to design the transmitter today, they probably would do something very much like FT8 and include redundant information and error correction code that, you know, we learned as computer technology evolved over the decades. But I don't think it's the frequency lock that handles that aspect of the magic. I think it's the decreasing the symbol rate and improving the antenna design.
Okay. In contrast to what you read, I have also searched, which I hate to do, and it says analog. CW telegraphy is Wikipedia. CW telegraphy is considered analog. It uses continuous wave transmission where information is sent as pulses of radio waves similar to electrical telegraphy using cables. This method is still in use today, particularly in amateur radio at certain military applications. Back to you.
And Roy, they do have the information on this site. About the data rate.
Oh, great.
160.0 /sec. So yeah, 160, I want to say beats per second. I'm not sure what the B is for in that case. But I remember it was 160, and that's what it is. And also the power that's received is minus 160 dB. That's way down there.
It's probably B for board.
Right, yes, you're right.
Okay, thank you very much, Paul. I don't know what to tell you, Wes. I mean, if you want to quibble about English terms, but ultimately, if you listen to Morse code, you can say it's analog because you're listening to it. You can't really conceive of it as listening to a binary signal. But ultimately, it is a binary signal because it only has two different states. It doesn't have a third state. In my mind, in order to really be 100% analog, it's got to have at least three different states, not two.
Yeah, you got a good point. So although, so I said, Wikipedia says it's analog because it uses continuous wave transmission in pulses. And that's how it was telegraphy 100 years ago. It's the same method. And ham radio uses it exactly the same way, only using radio waves. But you write about three states.
Yeah, and also CW can be read by a computer. So, you know, it's reading a digital signal. It's not, you know, I mean, again, it would be kind of pushing, you know, the wordplay. If you listen to it and it's analog and you connect it to your computer to read it and it's then digital. So, the same signal. So it's both analog and digital depending upon what's listening to it. It's sort of almost as flaky as quantum mechanics where probabilities don't occur until you collapse the wave functions by observing the system.
Yeah. Okay, so that would be all for today. 17. It's still the time for somebody else to take over and eventually pass some other institutions and then go after it. My wife just told me that she said it's a ban for the leaving the car today. Till midday of tomorrow. So let's intern emergency situation. Thank you very much, and I'm done for today. And to exit.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Wes, as always, for your participation. I am AC2GS. This is the Weimark Technical Net. The night is still young if people want to use the time. If anyone has any questions or topics of interest or what have you, hit the push to talk and ID yourself.
Hi, this is
Okay, unfortunately, you got about 60-70% noise in the background, so if there's any way that you can, you know, if you're operating on an HD, you know, bring it over to the window, or if you have a base station and you can kick up the gain a little bit, then give it another try, because I'd love to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, I don't think there's much I can do. I'm not sure you heard my... my handle is Jeremy, J-E-R-E-M-Y, is K-E-2-H-Q-F Hotel, Quebec, Foxtrot.
Okay, I heard that, Jeremy. Do you have a question or a topic of interest for tonight?
Yeah, very basic compared to what we've been discussing, grounding for the shack. I have a this new radio that runs off a 13 volt, and I bought a power supply, a little switching power supply.
Gosh, Jeremy, I think you fell out of the repeater. I hope nothing happened to your power supply. Are you out there, Jeremy? Okay, we seem to have lost Jeremy. Hopefully, I don't know, maybe he needs to switch his batteries, check his connections. I don't know. Not even just a weak signal. It just appears to be no signal. So we'll give you one more try, Jeremy. Are you back yet? Yeah, I hear most of what you're saying. You were asking about grounding. We talk about this a lot. There are people who get by in life with floating their ground because they're located in an apartment that's, you know, one of the higher levels, because they just aren't in areas that have a lot of static electricity problems or lightning problems, they're able to get away with it. So, you know, sometimes floating your ground suffices. Some people will plug it into a cold water pipe. You know, whether that helps a lot or not depends, again, on whether it's a continuous cold water pipe or there's plastic pipes in the middle, and how long the distance is to earth ground. I guess better than nothing. You shouldn't ground your system to your utility line, because those things have all kinds of current leakage possible, so that would be the noisiest. So if you have to do it internal, then a cold water pipe is better than a hot water pipe. If you possibly can, if you live close to the ground, it's always good to have a copper strap, you know, an inch, 2 inches wide. Run it down the back of your house into either a couple of copper plated rods, or if you can't handle that, if there's a cold water pipe, you know, in your backyard, that's also an option. It depends upon, you know, how much the risk is in your area of lightnings. There are parts of Long Island that are very common to get lightning strikes, and there are other portions in the metropolitan area that, you know, you go through an entire lifetime and not experience it once. So, you know, if you can, get a copper strap, hook it up to a copper rod in your backyard. But if you can't, you know, if you can connect it to a cold water pipe, you know, try that, but never plug it into a utility ground. Does that answer your question, Jeremy?
Yeah, that's helpful, and I do have a copper rod in the ground outside my shack, so I'll be using that, you know, and the question I have...
Okay, you fell out of the repeater just as you said. The question that I have is... Yeah, you're about 70% noise right now. I can catch every other word.
Okay, well, I appreciate you trying. I think I'm going to be okay. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Maybe try again next week. Hopefully propagation will be a little bit better, or, you know, these things are always subject to change. But nevertheless, thank you for your participation, Jeremy. I do appreciate it. Once again, this is AC2GS with the Limark Technical Net. We're still open for business. If anyone has any questions or topics for discussion, feel free, hit that push to talk. I don't know, I just hear little bits of noises. I don't hear a voice, so it might just be nothing, or it might be someone trying to capture the repeater. So, again, if you're using a handy talkie, consider taking that whip antenna over by the window, or if it's a base station, if you can boost up the output signal, you know, whatever you can figure out to do to reach our repeater. Or worst comes to worst, you could use our EchoLink, you know, just assuming you have EchoLink, just for the node W2VL-R, and try that. Or if you have AllStar, that's available too. And, you know, there's a lot of different ways to reach the repeater, so give it a try. Okay, well, what can I tell you guys? I've said it before. I'll no doubt say it again. I'll say it now. You know, this is not a broadcast. Dick, may he rest in peace, used to love to tell people how there were more technical net presentations than there were tonight shows. But Johnny did a broadcast. You know, the audience clapped a little bit, but otherwise didn't do anything. This is a net, and we do dialogues. We don't do monologues. And so I need, the other side of the equation. I'm more than happy to give my time and effort. But, you know, if no one wants to volunteer, then I can't very well talk to myself. You know, eventually someone will catch me and put me in an insane asylum. So once again, this is AC2GS. This is the Limark Technical Net, and we do have some more time tonight if anyone wants to take the opportunity. If not, we'll just move ahead to the next segment. But I want to give you guys a chance. You came here for a net, so I want to give it to you as best I can. So if there's anyone out there with any questions or comments or topics for discussion for tonight, want to share it with us and chat about it and roll it around in our brains, and I'll tell you what I think, and you can tell me what you think and what have you, then please do. Otherwise, we'll just have to move on. So this is AC2GS. If anyone has anything to say, please say it.
KG2RY, good evening.
Hello there, David. How are you tonight?
I'm excellent. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Nice and dry in here. well lit, and I have no complaints.
Someone told me that they're expecting 2 feet of snow in New York.
Well, I hope they're wrong, but as I mentioned on my 10-meter net this morning, there's not much you can do about the weather except complain about it.
I do my best not to complain because it usually works against me if I do.
Okay. I mean, personally, I find that generally it doesn't have any effect one way or the other. So, no win, no lose type of situation. I don't think there's anyone sitting around with a book saying, okay, you think you got yourself problems today. I'll give you some more problems tomorrow. Unfortunately, I don't think there's a guy sitting there with the book like that. But, what do I know?
Well, I think it's more about how a person measures that, you know. It's like, how do you see this picture?
I guess so. There are some variations in humanity's value systems for all manner of things, but then there's kind of a central common stance for things. You know, people like things that most of us consider beautiful. Yeah, there's always a couple people out there that like to see everything burned down, but most people don't.
I see it like this. You live and you learn.
Some people do. Unfortunately, I know more than a few who don't.
Then again, it's how you measure it, you know, in your picture.
May I ask a ham radio question and one white you like?
Yeah, certainly. You don't mind, David?
I can give you my question afterwards.
Okay. Hank?
Let David go. I didn't mean to interrupt him. I didn't think he had us going with a question. Please let him finish.
Okay. David, what's your question?
Well, this is a technical question for a very useful item that is, not so known. Made in the USA, Cadco, 6-inch coil burner, infinite thermostat on and off switch. What a great thing this is. Do you know about it?
No, I'm not even quite sure what you're talking about. You're talking about an inductive heater?
No, it has a coil burner. It's like the original old-style electric burner, you know, stovetop. And it's a commercial-grade stovetop. And I guess, like when I use it, it's so precise, it just blows away my gas stovetop.
Okay, well, modern-day stoves include inductive heating. Inductive heating is used for a whole bunch of things in addition to stovetops. I recently saw a YouTube where a guy was melting down a bar of gold using an inductive heating system.
QSL. Yeah, I know you can get inductive heaters and the stovetop type burners. You can get them. I've seen it there. But this one is sort of a traditional coil burner, and it is extremely, you get a very consistent result.
Okay. Again, I don't think I've ever seen something that kind of sounds like that, but, you know, there's a lot of equipment. Usually the problem I find with personal inductive heating oven tops is that the voltage supply that feeds them is not terribly good. So it takes a while for it to heat up and to get rather hot. I've seen manufacturers working on the design of inductive heaters that utilize charging and batteries and such, so that when you're not really using it, it still draws electricity, but it draws it to kind of charge up capacitors, and then when you finally start to cook something, it has significantly greater electrical energy to heat things up a lot faster. I don't know if they are selling them yet, but I've seen some guys working on them in research and development companies.
The answer is yes. They do sell them. You can buy them. But this one isn't an induction burner. It's coil. You know, before I got this one, I had another one, you know, same size, 6 inch in diameter, and it was really difficult to get it to heat with a consistent amount of heat. So I always had to turn the thermostat up and down, you know, to get the, let's say you're boiling water, you know. And then when the thermostat shuts off and the water stops boiling, you have to turn it up again. But with this CADCO, you know, you just set it for high and it boils. You know, you set it in medium, you cook. Set it on low and you are, you have a consistent amount of heat in there.
Oh, okay. I mean, is it made out of something like nichrome wire?
I don't know. But, you know, the thermostat, you know, electronics in this thing, yeah, quite amazing. And, you know, in terms of, like, electronics, this is my question for you. So the CADCO in the commercial-grade stovetop, you know, has an infinite thermostat, which is very precise. The other one, the old, I don't remember what the name of it was, you know, $20 on Amazon. And the electronics in there kind of, much more primitive.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to kind of guesstimate what's doing it. You know, it could have some kind of thermistor and intermittent power if it kind of goes off and on and off and on and off and on, or it could have a massive potentiometer that kind of limits the current. You know, it kind of depends on how it presents. Does it seem to be constantly drawing power, or is it kind of go off and on and cycle repeatedly?
The CADCO goes on and off, and very consistent heat. The other one, you know, it goes on, and then you have to turn it up, and it goes off, you have to turn it up to turn it on again, and then, you know, it's on for too long, you have to turn it down.
Okay, so the two operate differently, and, you know, I figure as long as the thermistor is well-designed and sturdy, that's probably the best approach to take, to not overshoot and not undershoot. A reasonably consistent amount of heat. It directly, the local kinetic energy runs the thermistor, so, you know, very little problem as long as the thermistor survives.
Well, you know, I'm used to using gas range. This one, much better, much more precise. I guess, you know, to keep the coil and the electronics in there, to keep them working the way they should, you know, I have to follow the directions, one thing being that the pot or pan that I use on there has to be pretty much the same diameter as the coil opening. And that I learned while reading about this thing in the on the internet. And I guess, you know, that's the answer. I think a heavy duty stovetop hopefully will last a long time, and I don't have to get another one.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, I've been looking it up. Unfortunately, you know, it doesn't really tell me much of anything. It says it has a Robert Shaw thermostat, and it's a robust thermostat to maintain consistent, precise temperatures, but it doesn't go into any details whatsoever of, you know, how it does its little magic trick.
QSL. Well, you know, I didn't want to spend a lot of money. I wanted to get a commercial-grade stovetop, commercial-grade. So I looked to see what's out there, you know. And this one caught my interest, so I guess I'll try it. I received it about 3 or 4 days ago, and it works really good. So hopefully it'll stay that way.
Yeah, I hope so. Unfortunately, I haven't had great luck with kitchen appliances in the last, say, 10 years. I bought a refrigerator back in, I think, 2002, and, you know, knock on wood, it's still going strong. But I find that appliances since then have, at best, a 5 or 6 year lifespan, unfortunately. I don't know if it's a design problem or what the heck's going on with them, but most people who've had a new refrigerator, say in the last 15 years, have had to replace it by now. So I hope you find this much more durable.
Thank you very much, Roy. You know, I think the latest appliance, you know, even the Cadco with a 6-inch diameter coil stovetop will have either a computer in it or artificial intelligence there, you know.
Well, sometimes lacking artificial intelligence is a good thing. I mean, I've mentioned before that the Samsung keeps on trying to promote this idea of refrigerators with screens on the front door that show you commercials throughout the day. So, you know, sometimes you just want a toaster that knows how to toast toast.
Or you can have a toaster oven that does convection, air fry, bake, and broil, you know, with artificial intelligence inside. But you still have to clean it if you make a mess.
Well, yeah, they haven't really come up with anything other than maybe a dishwasher as far as cleaning stuff. There's no real such thing as self-cleaning devices. They've tried to kind of come up with that stuff, but you always got to clean something on it.
Did you look into appliances such as electric oven and stove?
No, I have a gas line, so my oven is gas, but I have a microwave convection oven that's electric, and I have a air fryer that obviously is electric. And, it's a relatively simple design, although it has smart chips in it, and it connects by Wi-Fi, and there are applications on my cell phone that I don't really use that often, but they're available. That's kind of the thing that it's kind of difficult to get a dumb appliance in the last few years. Fortunately, all my appliances don't have AI written on them, but I'm sure the next time I have to replace them, AI is going to be stamped on everything in those days.
Yes, sir. But, you know, I look and see what is available for 20-inch wide oven and stovetop, electric, 240 volts and 40 ampere, that you have to have a circuit breaker for 40 ampere. That means you probably have to run a very thick cable down to your basement where your meter is.
Yeah. Unfortunately, those appliances require massive quantities of instantaneous power. So, yeah, it's going to be a heavy-duty piece of wire. And, you know, unless you want to pay to have it, punched in and replastered, it's not going to look terribly pretty either.
Well, there was one particular appliance made by a company, I think from Mexico, 20 inches wide, and it has a convection oven with baked broil and air fry built in, and the stovetop has induction burner. So this particular device, it costs a little bit more than the other one, although, you know, maybe there's more structure in the other ones, have more stuff in them. And to say 220 volts, 25 ampere.
Yeah, well, it's not going to get as hot and as fast in little time as the first one that you mentioned, because it's only requiring about half the power.
Yeah, but to push a car, to drive a car, you know, that is electric, you know, you have to have power up 80 amperes at least.
Yeah, well, you know, you're charging up a lot of batteries that store power, and the faster you charge these electric vehicle batteries, the shorter its lifespan. So in a perfect world, you don't really want to kind of supercharge them with incredible amounts of current, but you know, everyone's kind of in a hurry, so I'm sure we're shortening the lifespan of a lot of electric vehicles with very, very high current charging.
Well, you know, in order for me to power up a 25 ampere appliance from the electric panel for a circuit board, they have to put in another circuit breaker. 25 ampere, maybe, but, you know, probably not. Probably have to take the power from the meter, and I probably wouldn't use the oven very much, only the stovetop. So instead, you know, CADCO.
Okay, whatever works for you. There are some things that, you just want to use an oven for, but I understand.
Well, you know, depends on, you know, your ability, you know, to cook and to get your ingredients and all that together. You know, if you have a certain amount of technology for cooking, certain objects, certain items that will do the job, then you adapt to it, and then you create new and tasty dishes that, you know, are different than what you did before, but, you know, according to what these appliances can do.
Yeah, it depends upon how much you want to change your ways, and some people are kind of stuck in their ways, and they want to do what they want to do with what they want to use, and so, you know, some people take to, you know, I could live off of a convection oven, microwave oven type of a situation, but, you know, there are other people who, you know, cook massive ducks and and turkeys and all kinds of things where you can't shove it in any place around appliances like that. You need a proper oven. But, you know, everyone kind of makes their own settle and judgment and comparisons and comes up with what they can tolerate.
Get more of what you want. First, you got to know what it is. And it could be a process of reaching that goal, a process of getting what you want.
Yeah, but I'm sure there are people out there that want an oven. So, you know, what can I tell you?
For me, it's 40 amperes.
Yeah. I mean, it's very difficult to retrofit new appliances in older architecture. Probably it would be very difficult for me to even find any oven that would fit the hole that my present oven sits in. I would have to kind of have the cabinet sort of redone just to change the dimensions that a modern-day oven would fit in. So, you know, I just keep my old one.
QSL. And the magic, you know, you can create the magic, you know, with a microwave. You can create magic in almost any, you know, kind of cooking device. You figure out how to do it.
Well, it sort of depends. I mean, there are some things that you could do very easily in a microwave, but there are other things that just don't quite work out. I mean, I have found, baking a potato in a microwave is a terrible abuse of the potato.
You take some arugula greens, you put them in a bowl. You take some red potatoes, you boil them. So you boil the red potatoes. You can put them in soup, too. It's quite amazing. You put the red potatoes, boil them. You can cut them in pieces, you know. Then you put that on top of the arugula greens, and you put some cream herring on that.
Okay, but it's not a baked potato.
Well, you know, I tell you, for a baked potato, people got to have it that way. Then, you know, they're going to have to figure out how to do it. You know, I think that you can try different things, and, you know, you can get more from that.
I don't know. I just turn on the convection part of the oven, and I have a baked potato. That's how it works for me.
Do you leave the skin on?
Yes.
QSL. Well, you know, I'm so was used to having my oven and potatoes. You can bake in the oven, cut them into quarters or sizable half-inch pieces, you know, lift them around some kind of ceramic vessel, you know, with some olive oil or some avocado oil. Then you put the vegetables in there. Then you put some protein, either chicken or fish or tofu.
I guess so. I mean, I just find that if I ever need another microwave, I just make sure that it also includes a convection capability. And convection ovens are wonderful. Microwaves are great if you want to defrost something. If you want to really cook something, and there's a kind of unfortunate that the aspect of the way that microwaves cook is they don't cook from the out in. They cook from everything simultaneously, and they don't brown or caramelize anything. And so, you know, God forbid, a major travesty would be someone, you know, who had the nerve to make a steak in a microwave oven.
Yeah, I guess I can make a steak on the Catco. You ever make a steak in a pan?
Yeah, pans work fine. Again, you need something that sears. Microwaves don't sear, so they don't caramelize. Everything is about done the same way, and steaks don't come out that well that way, in my humble opinion.
You ever cook salmon in the microwave?
No, I I don't know. I've heard from people that, you know, people at work, when they bring fish into microwave, usually the rest of the people working there get very upset with them. So I assume microwaving fish is, it doesn't leave the best microwave.
Well, you know, there's a company where you can have food delivered to your house. You choose what you want to buy. You pay with a credit card. And you can buy dishes, you know, that are prepared, or they're not prepared, but they're designed to cook either in microwave or oven. And when they have, like, maybe four or five different salmon dishes, salmon comes raw, you put it into the microwave for 3.5 minutes, and boom, you have some really great lunch.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I see ads for these companies, especially on YouTube. They run loads and loads and loads and loads of them. You know, some of them are prepackaged and you just heat them up, and others are just the raw ingredients in little pouches, and there's a little instruction of how to put them together. I've never really tried those. I kind of put my food together. It's not that difficult. But, you know, it's... You know, there are guys that live and die by DoorDash. You know, they get restaurant food delivered. Sometimes more than once a day, and they sit there and they do their in-home job. You know, they code or they do technical support. It's a strange new world we live in.
The other thing is, if you live in a good neighborhood, you'll have a lot of restaurants to choose from. So if you're hungry, you just go out and sit down in a restaurant. And to say, I don't always cook. I don't always cook, but I cook a lot. So I get more of what I want in that way.
Well, it's not necessarily a good neighborhood, but a commercial neighborhood. My neighborhood, is, you know, you got to go a couple of blocks before you hit any kind of store. So... there isn't a lot of restaurants around here because of that. But, you know, if you live, especially, you know, you live down in the village, I mean, it strikes me that there's probably a restaurant or some food store, you know, every other store on those blocks.
You know, one time I ordered food from Williamsburg. Was it Williamsburg or what is the town? Bushwick. Yeah, I ordered food from a restaurant in Bushwick. This guy, I don't know how it happened, that, you know, he came, he took the food, he brought it over the Williamsburg Bridge into Manhattan, lower Manhattan, downtown in West Village, and what a surprise he delivered to me from Bushwick.
Yeah, that's very, very nice. I've gotten things delivered, and I was kind of amazed at the short distance that they simply wouldn't be bothered to travel at. This was before DoorDash and others, where individual stores had their own delivery guy. You know, he either had a car or he had a bicycle or something. And, you know, I would look up the distance, and it would be, you know, 1 mile, and they would say, oh, we don't deliver to that part of town. It's too far away. You know, what is your delivery? Within 2 blocks of the store? So that's good to hear. It depends on the method of the madness. Nowadays, I think most stores don't do this themselves. They have some kind of contract with DoorDash or Uber Eats or one of the other companies that do deliveries.
I don't usually order food from restaurants for delivery. I prefer to go to the restaurant and sit down in there. But I just have to tell you, right, it's 9:58, and I don't want to disturb my neighbors, so I have to say 73 for now. And thank you very much for this very nice conversation. Back to you, KG2RY.
Okay, very good, David. Thank you for your participation. Have pleasant dreams, and I hope you don't have too much snow in front of your apartment.
Well, the snow is out there. I can see it.
hopefully less than 2 feet.
Well, you know, I don't know how they can measure 2 feet of snow when it didn't fall when they were making that prediction.
It's very easy to make predictions. Some people do it all the time.
Well, you know, you got to be a movie star to be a weathercaster. People, you know, they watch the news so they can get the weather report.
Yeah, I tend to think that that's often a thing of the past. There's a lot of people I know that don't watch TV, don't watch the news. You know, they'll read something on a website or they'll see a YouTube or they'll do something. But you know, these days everything's moving away from local television news and such.
Well, you know, I think even the news, it's becoming more and more fictional, where, you know, it's like a story that, you know, tries to create a picture, a concept of, you know, what happened or what is truth.
Well, I think news has always been a story. I mean, what's the line? If it bleeds, it leads.
Yeah, it's like what I said before, you know, people watch the news so they can get the weather report.
Well, some do. I'm sure some don't. I mean, there's lots of applications out there that kind of provide you with the weather and the news and anything you would want, complete with alerts that make beeping noises on your watch or in your cell phone or some other place. So, you know, if you want to be part of the world, you can. If you want to be isolated and disconnected from the world, that too is possible in the modern day.
Well, I have to tell you, I'm so happy that I got this marvelous cooking device. What it can do is quite amazing, you know. And when I look to buy something like this, or this actual appliance, this thing, you know, it turned out to be even better than I thought it would be. And, you know, the seller of this item, you know, I write to him before he shipped it to me. And I said, does it work? He said, yes, it does work. I wanted to keep it, but I just didn't have the room. They, you know, send it over, you know, it's, how to say, less than half the price. And it was brand new. It's like they said, from open box.
Oh, okay, yeah. Sometimes you can get a very nice deal that way.
Well, you know, it's sort of like a new thing for me, this idea of using electric and avoiding certain substance that you can breathe in, you know. And once I was able to make the change, I start to feel like $1 million.
Okay, well, you know, some people still use gas ranges out there.
Well, you know, it's like this. Some people, they don't like to use gas. They don't use gas. So I decided that I didn't want to use gas anymore. And if I had the choice, you know, and I do have a choice whether to use it or not. So, you know, I think that it was a tremendous thing for me.
Okay. Some people haven't had any problems with gas. Some people were very upset when they started to pass laws that future homes, you know, aren't going to be built with gas. It's going to require electric cooking utensils and such. But, you know, the time changes, and again, people don't like change usually. You know, different strokes for different folks.
Yeah, you know, how to say, it's odd how I come to this realization, but, you know, how many years, you know, it was the other way. So it's hard for me to describe this thing. But electric for me is better, so I keep it like that.
Okay, very good. Well, it's been a pleasure. Hopefully you'll pop by next Sunday when we do this again.